This morning on TV, before services, I had turned it on to some channel, and there was a couple of popular religious speakers and writers on TV, both talking about how the time was near, and all the signs were pointing to it. These are both of these very, very well-known religious speakers and so forth, and they were telling us that these signs were coming. It's interesting that those people in the first century didn't understand it that way, and it was written to them. We finished the first part of Revelation a couple weeks ago, Revelation 1 through 11. It's kind of the first part of this book. Revelation 12. We are introduced to a spiritual war, a war we mentioned this morning. A war that essentially started way back in the garden when Satan tried to stop God's plan for our redemption. And we went through this morning all the, many of the events that Satan thought had stopped God's plan. But then we saw how God's will was done and that the Messiah was eventually born in Bethlehem. We saw last Sunday night this struggle, this battle, this conflict between the woman and the dragon. And we talked about how the woman was introduced in Revelation chapter 12 and she was introduced as the one who gave birth to the male child. And we talked about how Christ came through the Israelite nation, through the Jewish people, and how Satan had tried to stop him from being born through the lineage of David time after time after time. But Satan lost time after time after time. And that's an important thing to remember if you're living in the first century and you're being persecuted constantly on every hand by Satan and his helpers. In this case, his helpers were the Roman government, and in particular those priests that tried to get Christians to bow down to the emperor. So to hear the message that Satan had been trying to stop God's plan for millennia but had been unable to do it, that would be very comforting to you. That's why it's written. And so we have Revelation 12 written for them, and indirectly for us. But for them it meant so much. God is telling them that He has always stopped Satan's plans, and He will always stop Satan's plans. And even though they're suffering and they're being persecuted, they need to know that Satan is done. He is lost. And since the ascension, since Christ rose from the dead, all Satan has been doing is just trying to fill up hell as much as he could. He's lost, and he has no chance of winning. And he knows his ultimate end, as depicted in Revelation 20 and other places, is that place prepared for him and his angels, that lake of fire that burns with, brimstone. So that's his destination. He's already lost. He cannot win. And so that message is seen in Revelation chapter 12. We saw the first six verses last week. The introduction of the woman, the introduction of the male child, the introduction of Satan pictured as a great fiery red dragon. And how he was waiting for that male child to be born, Jesus, and he thought he was going to kill him. But he... His helper, King Herod, he would get it done, but no, an angel appeared and told Jesus' parents to go take him into Egypt. And that's how he escaped. We see the woman fleeing into the wilderness where she's a place prepared for God that she would be protected there. And the vast majority of people in our country and other countries that claim to be Christians believe that this is something that's going to happen way in the future. totally misunderstanding the fact that this happened a long, long, long time ago. And it was written for those first century Christians. And whenever we get away from trying to understand this book in any other light, we come up with something that is totally, totally false. See, throughout the religious world. So let's pick up then in Revelation chapter 12, verse 7. And war broke out in heaven. Michael and his angels fought with the dragon, and the dragon and his angels fought, but they did not prevail, nor was a place found for them in heaven any longer. A physical war? Definitely not. He wants us to understand that this is a spiritual conflict, so he says it's in heaven. There isn't any sort of physical anything in heaven. It's a place of spirits. It's a spiritual place. This is a spiritual war. And while that war between God and Satan has certainly been going on since the garden, what was very important for the first century Christians was to understand that God was fighting for them and that Satan was going to lose. That's what they needed to know. That's the message for those people in the first century. And, you know, in a way, it's the message, you know, for today as well, but far more for those people in the first century. So that's how it's depicted. A war broke out. Michael and his angels fighting with the dragon. Dragon and his angels fighting, but Satan loses. Satan continues to lose. No wonder we see Satan pictured as being angry. Think about how many wars and battles he's fought with God, and he's lost every single one of them. He thought he would win, then he realized he lost. Thought he would win, realized he lost. And we just looked at some of them this morning, but time after time after time, Satan, God has fought, Satan continues to lose. Here he's depicted as losing again. So what happens? So the great dragon was cast out, that serpent of old called the devil and Satan, who deceives the whole world. He was cast to the earth, and his angels were cast out with him. And again, he is shown or seen in a couple of different ways. He is called the devil, and he's called Satan. He is the accuser. He's the slanderer. He's the liar. Those are the words that come from the devil and Satan. That's what Satan does. Isn't that when we first see him in the garden? We see him as a deceiver. He deceived Eve and ended up indirectly deceiving Adam, and thus sin was brought into the world. How? Out of deception. That's what Satan does, and he is the best at it. He's the great deceiver. And he thinks he's going to win. And we see him losing and losing and losing. So it says he deceives the whole world. Every single individual? Of course not. But that's what it looks like. And isn't that still true today? Satan has deceived most of the world. And in every generation that's been true, Satan has deceived most of the world. Those who have God, followed Christ, has always been in the very, very small mind. And so he has been successful in deceiving them. The problem is he simply can't defeat God. And that's what he's always wanted, is to defeat God. But he hasn't been able to do it. In the first century, in the second century, and then even partly into the third century, he used that imperial Roman government. And that those Roman priests, those were his cohorts, his helpers in trying to defeat God. Didn't work, but he still tried. And that's what Satan continues to do. And so he's our adversary. That's what the word Satan means. He's our enemy. And he's always been our enemy. And he'll continue to be our enemy. And he's going to continue to try and deceive people. My throat went out this morning a couple times, and it probably isn't going to last tonight either. But I don't know what that's about. So his angels were cast out with him. Let's move on to verse 10. Then I heard a loud voice saying in heaven, Now salvation and strength and the kingdom of our God and the power of His Christ have come, for the accuser, there's the idea of, there's the devil and Satan, that's what he does, of our brethren who accuse them before our God day and night, has been cast down. Satan lost much of his power. When Christ died and rose from the dead, Satan lost much of his power. And we see that shown here. And so this loud voice says, Now salvation, and he mentions strength and the kingdom and the power have come. From the very beginning, from the time Jesus rose from the dead and then the church was began and the church multiplied, we see this coming true. And the woman, remember, while she in the first part of Revelation 12 is symbolic of those faithful Jewish people who through whom the Messiah came, now she is seen to be the faithful of God's people in that first century and then, of course, the second and so on. And so that's what has happened to Satan. He has been dethroned in a lot of ways. He doesn't have that power anymore. And again, let's look at it through first century glasses. You know, you look out into the world, you're living in the first century, and you see the Roman government so powerful with so many resources trying to destroy Christianity, trying to destroy the church. And then here we're shown, they are shown, that Satan loses over and over and over again. And not only that he loses, he's lost a lot of his power. Now think about how that would make you feel if you were trying to live a faithful Christian life in the first century, and that's to whom it's written. And so this is, Revelation 12 was a very comforting chapter, a chapter of hope, a chapter of courage, a chapter to admonish those Christians to keep on being faithful, because Satan cannot beat them. They can give in, they can surrender, but Satan can't beat them if they don't want to be beat. And that's a tremendous message. So what happens? And they overcame him by the blood of the Lamb and by the word of their testimony, and they did not love their lives to the death. How did they defeat Satan? There it says. They defeated Satan. They overcame him. How? By the blood of the Lamb. Of course, the sacrifice of Jesus. Remember, that was the great victory that Jesus won over Satan, was dying on the cross and then being raised from the dead, because Satan thought when Jesus died, when his spirit left his body, Satan really thought it was over and he had won. And so how did these people overcome? They overcome by the blood of the Lamb and by the word of their testimony. That was essential to their overcoming. And they did not love their lives to the death. They weren't concerned if they had to give up their lives for the cause. So be it. They knew by doing that they were defeating Satan. Yeah, they might have to give up their physical life, but that meant nothing, because they knew they won. They knew because of the Lamb that they were going to be saved. They were going to a better place. And so that was, a comforting thing for them to hear. So they didn't refuse to die for the truth. They would, and many, many did. But by knowing that it was for a good cause and that their cause wasn't lost and that Satan wasn't going to win, they could go into death with hope and with assurance that they were going to a better place. So again, we see this through first century glasses. That's how these people would have seen it, and that's why they would have been encouraged by reading it. Therefore rejoice, O heavens, and you who dwell in them. Woe to the inhabitants of the earth and the sea, for the devil has come down to you having great wrath, because he knows he has a short time. No wonder he's angry. He's been beat and beat and beat, and he's lost and he's lost and he's lost. And when Jesus rose from the dead, Satan knew that's it. He knew he was headed to that lake of fire and brimstone. He knew That was his final and eternal destination. He knew he'd lost. That was it. That was his last chance. And so now he has been, for the last nearly 2,000 years, trying to get as many people to join him in that lake of fire and brimstone as is possible. Because he cannot win. And that message is repeated in the book of Revelation over and over and over again. Satan losing. God being victorious. Christ being victorious. The Christians being victorious. Satan losing. That's the message over and over and over again. And that's what the people needed to hear in the first century. But those people, woe to the inhabitants of the earth and the sea, Satan is angry and Satan wants as many of those people as possible. And when we look out into the world and we look at history, Satan has gotten most of those people. How? Because he's deceived them. He's deceived them with false religions. He's deceived them in so many ways. Satan loves for new religions to pop up. Satan is a very religious person. Extremely religious. He's just religiously wrong. But he loves new religions. Any new religions that can draw people away from the truth, he is really happy about. And so he still uses deception to draw people away from the truth. So no wonder it says, woe to the inhabitants of the earth and the sea. Not people who are literally living in the sea or something, the people of the world, because Satan is going to deceive them if they allow him to. He can't force anybody into that lake of fire. He can't force anybody into hell. But he can deceive them and take them with him. And that, of course, is what he is trying to do. Because he doesn't want to be alone there. He likes company. And so he wants a great multitude to be there in the lake of fire and brimstone with him. The picture slightly changes now in the rest of the chapter, but it's essentially, verses 13 through 17 is essentially the same picture as verses 7 through 12. It's basically a retelling of the same story, just depicted differently. Different details brought out. Notice what he says. Now when the dragon saw that he had been cast down to the earth, he persecuted the woman who gave birth to the male child. Same picture. The faithful of God, the church, is being persecuted. The people in the first century knew that well. They knew that Satan was persecuting them. But what? But the woman was given two wings of a great eagle that she might fly into the wilderness to her place, where she is nourished for a time and times and half a time from the presence of the serpent. This is the same time span that's been used the past two or three chapters. That's 42 months, that 3.5 years, that 1,260 days. That same time span. Sometimes it's pictured as days, sometimes as years, sometimes as months. But it's exactly the same time period. It's that indefinite, temporary time period. And again, if you're in the first century hearing that the devil is persecuting you only for a temporary period of time, that's good news. That's very good news. And so that's what Revelation 12 is telling them. It's good news. It's temporary. And even at that, God is protecting them. Because she has gone into a wilderness, not a real wilderness. The church didn't really go into a wilderness, a deserted place, and stay there to avoid Satan. That's not what happened. But God nourished her. So what happened? We see Satan getting angry again. So the serpent spewed water out of his mouth like a flood after the woman, that he might cause her to be carried away by the flood. And even in the Old Testament, and these people would have known this, the people to whom this is written knew a lot about apocalyptic literature and knew about what signs meant. You know, our society doesn't think much in terms of signs like they did in the first century. But the people in the first century, these people would have understood signs much more easily than we do, especially numerical signs. It was just part of their culture and society to use numerical signs and other types of signs. So they knew what letters like 3 men and 6 men and 7 men and 10 men and 12 men. They were very accustomed to those numbers being signs. You know, we're not today. We don't use that in any way. that the people in the first century did, especially the people to whom this is written. So it wouldn't have been a great mystery to them. And so today, we try to put some sort of, people in the religious world, try to put some sort of bizarre connotations onto all of these numbers. And think that it's written primarily for the people of our generation. And it's not. It was written primarily for the people of the first century. People to whom these numbers made a lot of sense and they understood clearly. Whereas they don't understand it basically at all. So, the serpent spewed water out of his mouth like a flood. Well, it wasn't a literal flood. But again, when you go back and you look at how symbols are used, a flood is often used to symbolize persecution and struggle and suffering. And so we see the serpent, the devil, that great fiery red dragon doing what? Persecuting the woman. Causing suffering. And that's what the woman was experiencing in the first century. She experienced it in the second century. Third century, it started to decrease some. By the fourth century, it was gone. But in the first and second especially, she was experiencing this flood by the serpent. She was experiencing this torment and persecution and suffering. So it was written directly to those people. And they understood that. And they were comforted from it. Because notice what happens in verse 16. But the earth helped the woman. Who controls the earth? God does. See, and that's what God wants them to understand. God's in control. Satan's not in control. The serpent's not in control. God is in control. And so the earth helped the woman, and the earth opened its mouth and swallowed up the flood which the dragon had spewed out of his mouth. So there again we see God's protective hand, God watching over them, God taking care of them, God seeing that they were watched over in many ways. And then he ends. Now remember, Satan's been trying to destroy the church in particular, seemingly as a whole. This woman depicts the faithful people there in the first century, the second century, and Satan went after the whole woman. He was trying to destroy the entire church. He just thought, if I can get the whole church destroyed, then that's the end. Won't have to worry anymore. Well, now in verse 17, his tactics slightly change. Notice how there's a slight change in verse 17. And the dragon was enraged. Well, he was really angry, great wrath back in 12. Now he's depicted as being enraged with the woman. And he went to make war with the rest of her offspring who keep the commandments of God and have the testimony of Jesus Christ. Who keep the commandments of God and who have the testimony of Jesus Christ? Well, Christians. Several people see in this how he changed from trying to destroy the whole church at once to going after individual Christians. And maybe that's what he's describing here. And since then, that's what Satan has done. You know, Satan hasn't really tried to destroy the whole church at one time. But what does he do? He goes after individual Christians. And how? He deceives them. And he deceives them in so many different ways. He tries to get them to think that doing as little as possible is just fine with God. He tries to get them to think that they need to be more like the religions, the faiths around them. That's how he deceives them. He deceives them into thinking that they need to have the same type of lifestyle as the people in the world. I mean, he deceives them in so many different ways. And so he goes after the seed, the offspring. He goes after people, Christians, individually. This whole chapter has shown, described, portrayed that tremendous struggle and battle that's gone on since the early days of the world between God and Satan. And the people in the first century would have been greatly encouraged by seeing all the defeats that Satan experienced. And being reminded of them. And being reminded that God is in control and he's more powerful than Satan, and that Satan has an end, and the end is in the lake of fire and brimstone. That would encourage them, and that would have admonished them, and that would have... And that's exactly what it did. No, this book has nothing to do with the rise of a new Roman Empire. Many people, some of the people I watched this morning on TV, believe there's going to be a new Roman Empire. Even though Daniel chapter 2 says that's never going to happen. But if you interpret Revelation like so many people in the world do, you have to believe there's going to be a brand new Roman Empire rising from somewhere. An imperial Roman Empire, just like was in the first and second centuries and the third centuries. But yet this book doesn't talk about that at all. It says just the opposite. The Roman Empire is dead and gone, and it will never rise again, because the kingdom of our Lord has broken it into pieces. Those are Daniel's words in Daniel chapter 2. I think it's verses 44 and 45. Many people in the religious world believe that in the near future, they believe the time is near, that this great physical battle is going to take place on earth. And when you listen to them, you get the distinct impression that this has been the belief of Bible-believing people since the first century. Not true. It's only been a little over 100 years. And one of these nights, when we have time, we'll talk about the beginning. It began with a woman. A young woman who had visions. Well, she claimed to have visions. About all these things, about the rapture and about different resurrections and all these things. And that was way up in the 1800s. Before then, this type of thing that you see on TV was totally unknown. No one believed that. So it's just been a little over 100 years that these wild, wild ideas about the book of Revelation has came into being. And again, it started primarily from that one young woman in Great Britain who allegedly had visions. And from them, from her, all kinds of people. Schofield, who wrote the Schofield Reference Bible, wrote it not too long after her visions. And of course, in that Bible is the whole teaching of what you see so much on TV. But that's for another day. We have hope because of what we see in the Bible. Not about something that's going to happen in the future, but because of what's happened in the past. The evidence we have seen that God is in control and Satan has lost. And we just have to be aware of his devices, as Paul told the church of Corinth. Be aware of his devices and don't let him deceive you, as so many people in the world have done. They've allowed Satan to deceive them. The Bible says, resist the devil and he'll flee from you. See, he's not all powerful. We can resist the devil. We can do that. And we have to continue to do that. And one way we can do that is asking for prayers and being here like we are tonight. You know, we're resisting the devil by being here tonight. And we can cause him to flee from us by being here tonight. Another reason for our meeting. And so as we sing this song in a moment, if you need to respond by becoming a New Testament Christian, experiencing the new birth, if you need to ask for prayers, we encourage you to come as we stand and sing this song.